Okay, our third featured reader is Anne Claycomb. Superman, Vader, a novel idea, mermaids at the opera.
Actually, Superman and Darth Vader at the opera is even better, I think. But I didn't think of that one. All right, so I'm reading an excerpt from the middle, so like Rebecca, of a story in which we have an art student who is about to get engaged, and a few days before the engagement breaks her left wrist. So her ring was platinum with a delicate filigree setting all around the central diamond, very Art Deco. It was a ring that Amy imagined she could find in a dusty little antique shop somewhere, tucked away in a case of hideous estate jewelry, ruby ladybugs as big as the first joint of a finger, big knots of gold studded with pearls, whose only possible decorative function must be to disguise the swelling of arthritic knuckles. And there her ring would be, slender and perfect, needing a quick dust and a polish, and the saleswoman saying in a tone of surprise and wonder, "Well, I didn't even know we had this one." And Amy would put it on, and it would fit perfectly. She finally despaired and sent Drew a link to the designer's website. He had replied with a short email. "Why did you send me this, I wonder? Must have been a mistake. Guess I'll just delete it. LQTM, love you, D." LQTM, laughing quietly to myself. Amy felt laughed at. She wished she hadn't sent the link. She knew Drew had bought her a ring, though. She knew he was going to propose on Saturday. It had become a joke between them, because it was their anniversary and they were going out to dinner. Drew's tactic had been to announce to everyone and anyone that he couldn't imagine why Amy would think he was proposing that night. He certainly wasn't going to, and she better not get her hopes up. Then he would catch her face, the wobble of the smile that she hoped no one would see, and he would wink at her, lean over, and kiss her on the nose. She'd bought a new dress, of course. Anu went with her and tried to talk her into a pistachio-colored sweater dress that Amy could see objectively looked lovely on her. But it wasn't what she wanted to wear to get engaged. She bought a black cocktail dress instead, shorter than she usually wore and too tight unless she sucked her stomach in. It had sheer sleeves that ended in wide cuffs at the wrists, buttoned with jet beads shaped like flowers. When she put the ring on, it would be the only bright thing she had on, her outfit a backdrop for its sparkle and shine. She'd have to leave one sleeve unbuttoned now. When the orthopedist finally arrived, he pronounced her wrist broken nice and clean. She put her arm up on the cold metal table and watched it grow into a clumsy baby of an arm, braced and swaddled in cotton. A spattering of plaster got on her biceps, and Amy scraped it off under her fingernails, then realized that with her left hand immobile, she couldn't get the grit out from under the nails on her right. Left alone in the lobby with her discharge papers, she chewed at the gluey stuff, rolled it at the tip of her tongue, and spat it into her palm. She looked down at her left arm. It was casted above the elbow. The orthopedist said that would only be for a week, and then he'd cut it down, but Saturday was only 4 days away. Amy felt her eyes fill up with tears. "Hey, you," someone said. "Quit that." Amy blinked at Anu, who took a look at the arm and immediately understood. "Oh, baby," she said. "Of all the times in your entire life to break your left wrist." "It could have happened Friday. Or Saturday night on the way out the door," Anu said. She sat down and gave Amy a quick, hard hug. Anu wasn't much of a hugger, so Amy tried to appreciate the gesture. "It'll be fine," she said. "It doesn't matter." "Of course it matters," Anu said. "Maybe you can wear the ring on a chain around your neck for a while." "It's all Siobhan's fault." "What is?" Anya said. "My wrist," Amy said. "It's Siobhan's fault I broke it. If I hadn't been so upset about her stupid comment on my work, I would have been paying attention on the steps." "I'm willing to blame Siobhan for any number of things," Anya said. "I don't have a problem with that. Ready to get out of here?" She draped Amy's coat over her shoulders, then held the doors to the outside. "I caught a ride," she said, "so I could drive your car back. Give me your keys." Amy watched Anu striding across the parking lot, knowing she wasn't going to fall. She had on duck boots, probably the pair she'd had since college, jeans, and some kind of stunning orange tunic thing embroidered with gold thread at the neck and cuffs, all of it muffled under a very long, lumpy forest green scarf that Anu had knitted herself and wore everywhere in the winter, often instead of a coat. Over the scarf swung Anu's glossy black bell of hair. Anu's hair sometimes stirred Amy's bubbling jealousy of women who had even a single feature that could be called striking. She coveted the clean, long line of Anu's nose, the triangular angles in which Anu's hair moved when she walked, the blunt, square ends of her fingers, on which the nails were always short, though Anu sometimes painted them copper or emerald green. In the car, Amy looked down at her hand. Her fingers looked like sausages. Not sausages, because they weren't swelling evenly. They were swelling more down where the cast was pinching them. My fingers look like crescent rolls, she said. You know, like if you cut one in half. Look at how fat they are. She tried to hold her hand out for Anu to see. Stop staring at them, Anu said. Why is this Siobhan's fault? I was working on my new piece. You know, the one using those cookbooks I found last month at the thrift store. And she came up behind me. Uh-oh. Yeah, thank you. Siobhan was a year ahead of them in the program. She was very tall, and Amy could not look at her without thinking the word willowy. She had a lot of pale red hair, exactly the color of raw salmon, as Amy had pointed out one night after several drinks. Anu had snorted vodka out her nose and spent the rest of the night intermittently wiping her eyes. There was, however, no denying the fact that it was very attractive hair in person, much like the rest of Siobhan. She played up her pre-Raphaelite image, wearing velvet and brocade, thick belts slung around her non-existent hips. She wore a perfume that smelled exactly the way Amy had always imagined a seraglio would smell, incense and sex and spices used for tea. The mere whiff of Siobhan's perfume made Amy mad, because it was just so fucking perfect, and Siobhan knew it. When she smelled that perfume in the studio earlier, Amy had tensed up, steadied her hand, then tapped a yellow-fringed toothpick down in the glue. "Hi, Siobhan," she said. "Hi, Amy. I hope you don't mind. I love watching you work. It's so meticulous. I can't imagine having that kind of patience." Amy tried to ignore her. She picked up a slip of paper cut from one of her cookbooks and considered how to place it near the toothpick fan. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see the rosy gleam of a lock of Siobhan's hair trailing on her work table as Siobhan bent in. "What's the theme here? Oh, cookbooks. Domesticity again. You should consider doing a whole series on domesticity, Amy. There's something so crafty about your medium. It really just works, you know." "Well, I'll leave you alone. That looks painstaking." Siobhan worked on such a large scale that she sometimes used a ladder when she painted. She called herself a sexual political artist. She already had a dealer, and one of her paintings had been included in an exhibition at a New York gallery entitled Vixens and Visionaries, 12 Women Artists for the New Millennium. It was an enormous canvas painted entirely with the image of an open vagina, petaled and matte like a Georgia O'Keeffe flower. Coming into the canvas at an angle from above, Siobhan had drawn a paintbrush, coated with pink paint and oversized, to match its purported subject. The painting was called Cunnilingus, and it had sold the first night of the show. "It's not like she hasn't said stuff like this before," Anu said. "I know." Amy looked out the window. A CD that Anu had given her was playing Indian music, a wild dancing surge that Amy wanted to love but felt mostly surprised by. It sounded more than celebratory. It felt like a small, distant bacchanal was happening inside the dashboard. Amy didn't even know the names of half the instruments. She didn't know how the singers were making those noises in their throats, the ululations that ought to have been wailing but were instead clearly ecstatic. She glanced over at Anu, who was looking for an opening in traffic, so that she could turn left into their apartment complex. Anu was a brilliant artist, better than Siobhan. Amy appreciated the irony of Anu defending Amy's small work, because Anu herself did not do small work. She painted in saturated colors. Her people were life-sized, neither monstrous nor miniature. She was a second-year MFA student, but she'd already won a major prize for a self-portrait that Amy only dimly understood. It was beautiful and surreal, and titled, "What I Look Like to Salman Rushdie When He Slipped Through My Window One Moonlit Night." Amy's favorite was another self-portrait, this time of Anu wearing the red and gold sari and henna hands of a Hindu bride, having sex with a white boy whose face you couldn't see. Anu's face in the painting looked out at the canvas with a hint of the serene challenge of Frida Kahlo, while the henna tattoos spiraled off her hands and spread across her lover's thin white chest. "How was class, anyway?" Amy asked. "Don't change the subject," Anu said. "You've got to stop letting Siobhan get to you. Sometimes when I see her in action, I think she can't even help it, like a vampire." "Vampires don't tell people their work is crafty." Anu pulled into a parking space. "They might," she said. "Maybe it's not even the blood-sucking that kills. Maybe it's the pre-bite insults." Amy pictured Siobhan the vampire trying to say, "There's something so crafty about your medium," and failing to get the words out around her fangs. The image made her smile as she shifted clumsily to undo her seatbelt with her right hand. "Let me do it," Anu said. She caught the smile. "Was it something I said?" "You know," Amy said, "someday you're going to fail to cheer me up when I get stupid. And then what will you do?" "My life will lose all meaning," Anu said.